You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Wednesday to you. We appreciate you being with us. A lot to get to today. Arkansas-Kansas basketball tomorrow night in Providence. We're going to talk with Greg Gurley, the Kansas radio color analyst. Also, Anthony Christensen's in Providence. We'll get his take after seeing the Razorbacks and talking to John Calipari up there today. Christina Long will join me in the studio a little bit later. We'll talk about that Razorback baseball win last night at Baumwalker Stadium. But we start with Greg Gurley. Greg joined us back in October before the exhibition game here in Fayetteville. So, Greg, it's good to talk to you again. Kind of tell us about, you know, what has transpired over the last 5 months with the Jayhawks.
Yeah, you think about it. When we last talked in October, you know, we were preseason number one. You guys were looked like a team that was going to be in the top five, top ten, just like us. We've had very interesting years. I think both of us didn't really go the way we thought it would. I mean, we got our eyes open. We went to Arkansas, and Arkansas whooped us. And granted, we didn't have a couple of starters, but it was still an eye opener. And then we go on a pretty good run, and then kind of got exposed a little bit. And here we are, right back where we started, playing Arkansas in March. So I think the selection committee did that. I think it's great. I mean, Self and Calipari, what more can you ask for?
John Calipari said after that game in October that he asked Bill Self not to play zone. I don't think that Coach Self is going to take that request this time around.
Well, you know, Bill's a 99% of the time man guy, mm-hmm. and we don't ever practice it. And he's a big, like most coaches, you don't play unless you practice it. And so if we were to run any zone, it would be like two possessions, maybe.
Well, like Kansas, when I see them, and I watch a lot of their games, I probably watched about 20 of their games this year, they remind me a lot of Arkansas in that there's a lot of talent there, but they're playing really good teams. They've got some wins over some good teams, and then a ton of their losses is to really good competition. I mean, you know, based on what you know about Arkansas, do you see that kind of similarity between these two?
Well, man, I'm kind of like you. I watched a lot of Arkansas play as well. You know, you know, both Kansas and Arkansas on, you know, the mothership a lot on ESPN. So if you're a college basketball junkie like me and you, you watch it. And so I agree. I see a lot of similarities. You know, we put together a great roster just like Arkansas did. And there were times that when we were all connected, we can beat Duke. But then there are times when we aren't and we lose to Utah. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason that Kansas should ever lose to Utah. It was just one of those deals, just like you guys had head scratchers like we did as well. And it's hard to really put your finger on exactly what the problem was at times for Cal at Arkansas or Bill at Kansas. Again, someone like you who watches everything, I can't really tell. I mean, for us, our guard play at times was suspect. We knew what we were getting out of Hunter Dickinson. He's a double-double machine. KJ's a role player, energy guy, make winning plays, but not offensively gifted. DeJuan's kind of the same way. And we really needed our guards to pick up the slack, and that's been spotty at best. Zeke Mayo's been really good, but when we've struggled, he struggled. And so it's not rocket science. You got to have all five guys connected to be an elite team. And I think we have an elite roster. Mm-hmm. We just haven't played consistently like, you know, at Kansas, Arkansas, Kentucky, all these, you know, big time programs that have big time coaches and big time talent. We're just not used to going through what we've gone through and what you've gone through where you, like, we always win close games. It's just what Bill Self has done. And this year, we didn't. And so our fan base is just like, what is wrong? Did Bill forget how to coach, or he needs a GM? All the questions came in, like I'm sure they came in Fayetteville as well. Like, has the game passed these Hall of Famers by? Which, not true. It just takes longer to develop. And the one thing you don't have is time. So the John Calipari's and Bill Self's that would get the, you know, the guys that would be with you for two or three years, you just don't have anymore.
You know, and you talked about the talent of these two rosters. You look at North Carolina last night and what happened in their game with Texas. It's like when you have talented rosters and they get their backs against the wall in March, they can play really well all of a sudden. And I kind of feel like, you know, and going back to how these two teams, you know, seem like there's a lot of similarities between them, it feels like because of that and because of the caliber of the coaches that it could potentially bring out a really fun, entertaining, great type of game tomorrow.
No question. I think where we're different in our game is other schools are going to play teams that have had 3 days to prepare. And, you know, you're not playing SEC competition or Big 12 competition. You're playing somebody new. And the coach has got to scramble and get film and all that. It's different with us because we played in exhibition. You know, we know your personnel. You know our personnel. Bill and Cal know each other's mannerisms and how they want to do things. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit different in our game. But I agree. This could be a great, entertaining, competitive game where, you know, when you get into the tournament, you know as well as I do, guards tend to take over because the game, you know, we take the air out of the ball a little bit and you get down to 8 on the shot clock and guys got to make plays. Will your guys be able to make plays? Will our guys be able to make plays? Like, it's called take them. I mean, you can run schemes and actions and whatnot, but when those don't work, you have to have multiple guys that can break the defense down and create a shot for themselves or others. And that's what it's all going to come down to.
One of the matchups we didn't get to see in October, Hunter Dickinson didn't play and Jonas Adu didn't play. You saw them play last year in Maui at the Maui Invitational whenever Adu was playing for Tennessee.
Yep.
It feels like this could be a really fun matchup on Thursday. And again, it's one we didn't get to see back in October. And so what do you remember about the game last year at Maui? And how do you think this matches up, the two of them?
The Maui game, which was actually in Honolulu because of the wildfires, it was a weird deal for us because we played the night before and we lost to Marquette and we didn't get back to our hotel till like 11, 1130 at night. And then we played that game tipped at 10 a.m. the next morning. So we had less than 12 hours to get ready for that game. And we were like, oh boy, we could leave here 1-2. And it was a toughness type game. The matchup between those two, I don't really remember a whole lot about other than that was, you know, Tennessee is so tough and plays great D. And that was actually a really big win for us. You know, we got third place and then, you know, nobody cares about third place, but that was the type of game that we found out a lot about our guys on just, hey, not a lot of rest. You got to, you know, no excuses. And it's no secret when we're rolling is when we get the ball in the paint to Hunter and he breaks defenses down and you, Arkansas is going to have to decide, is Adu going to be enough just one-on-one matchup or are you going to have to bring a double team? And if you bring a double team, he's a great passer and we've got guys fading to the corners and the elbows for threes and lanes to the basket. So that's, you know, in a nutshell with Kansas, Bill wants paint touches through Hunter or through dribble penetration. And then that breaks defenses down. You got to make a decision, pick your poison and see what happens. And so that'll be the matchup. That'll be the key on the offensive end for us.
Kansas won the national championship 3 years ago. DeJuan Harris was on that team. KJ Adams was on that team. Do you think that experience pays off at all for the Jayhawks this week?
Oh, I think sometimes that gets a little overrated. To a degree, it'll be a factor, but such a different team. I mean, you know, we talked all year about DeJuan Harris and his positives and his negatives. He was great. He was a starting point guard on the national championship team, but why he was so effective is because he had three pros around him. He had Christian Brown, Ochai Agbaji, and Jalen Wilson. And when you have pros around you, you don't have to do as much. I mean, DeJuan can be that pass first, second, and third guy. And that's exactly what he did in that game. And now when your guard play has been up and down, whether you have experience or not, I mean, DeJuan never gets affected by the environment because he, you know, played in front of 60,000 people in a national championship game. There's nothing greater than that. But it'll be a factor, But again, with every team has just got so much different personnel. I don't think, I mean, it'll help in the locker room a little bit, but that stuff, we as media, I think, overrate that type of stuff a little more. And it's all in how we, you know, want to explain our narrative on why we lost or why we won. And, you know, if we win the game, we'll say, hey, that experience was great. If we lose, we'll say, well, we got a bunch of new guys, you know.
I wanted to ask you about how the last couple of tournaments have gone for KU, because it feels like they've been a little bit at snake bit. When they lost to Arkansas a couple of years ago in Des Moines, Coach Self couldn't coach. And then last year when you lost to Gonzaga in Salt Lake, I mean, KU had just been decimated by injuries by that point.
Yeah, last year was an example of we just didn't have bodies. And, you know, and we ran into a high-scoring Gonzaga team. They exposed us. We had a competitive first half. I think we might even have been winning at half by one or two. But, man, they boat raced us in the second. And again, that was Kevin McCullough was out, and we just didn't have a very deep bench, and it was a numbers game. So this offseason, we remedied that, and we got a deep bench. We got guys that Bill can look down there and be like, if this guy isn't doing it, go try. And so we're in a much better position than we were in, even though we had an up-and-down year. We all, you know, every coach that doesn't win their conference tournament says the same thing. Hey, it's a new season starting from scratch. And, you know, but there's going to be a Hall of Fame coach that's going to go home upset tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. You know, you see this sometimes at, you know, regional final sites or the Final Four. I think about when Kansas lost to Syracuse in the title, you had Jim Boeheim and Roy Williams and Rick Barnes were all at that Final Four. But you rarely see a coaching pod like you're going to see this week up there in Providence, where you've got Patino and Self and Calipari. I mean, this is a star-studded little mini four-team field this week.
It really is. I mean, when I was watching Selection Sunday, I was like, wow, this is going to be an interesting, you know, press conferences, open practices. It'll be fun because it's coaching royalty everywhere you look. And, you know, and there's, you know, we can all draw, you know, when you look back at Kansas, you know, and some of Patino's history playing in Lawrence. He had a famous game when he was the coach of Kentucky where Kansas scored the most points in their history, 150 points when Roy Williams and him played. I believe it was 1989. So there's a lot of subplots going on here. You know, Cal and Bill both being Kansas coaches at one point, and you know, over the last few years, you know, even coming down to Arkansas and we went to Herman's that night and had a little charity event for mental health, and it was great just to watch Bill and Cal kind of go back and forth with each other about the state of the NCAA and NIL and all the different things that they're going through, or we're all going through right now. So nothing but respect between those two guys, and obviously Rick Pitino is right there with them. So a pretty cool, gonna be a cool atmosphere tomorrow night and here in Providence.
Greg, we'll get you out of here on this. What do you think the key is for both of these teams? Like if Arkansas wins, what has to happen? And for Kansas to win, what do you think has to happen?
Well, I think when I look at Kansas, we defensively is something that Bill's always kind of hung his hat on. And this is we lost Arizona in the Big 12 tournament because we just couldn't stay in front. And they didn't beat us from beyond the arc. They did early, but after they made five out of their first six threes, they only made three more. They were getting anything they wanted at the rim. They were breaking our defense down on ball screens. And so I think a key for Kansas is staying in front of your guards. I mean, your guards get downhill and penetrate to score and penetrate to pitch. And your big fella he causes a lot of problems because number one of his size and then his ability to step out and hit the three. So I think defense and rebounds, the things that have lost games for this year is we don't play good defense, we turn the ball over, and we get out-rebounded. And that seems like a dumb thing to say because that's pretty much the recipe to beat anybody, but that's when we've struggled. If we take care of the basketball and we get on the glass and we can defend decently, we're as good as anybody in the country, but those are big ifs. And then I think for Arkansas, they've got to contain Hunter Dickinson. And you know, if I'm playing Kansas, you know, I'd double team him. And that's where you get your pick your poison, because he is such a good passer. And if we can make shots, which we've done a better job of the last month. We've definitely shot the ball better, and that's what can get you propelled in the NCAA tournament to keep winning is making shots. Another dumb statement by a radio analyst, but it's true. I mean, if you can break guys down and get end of clock buckets, you got a good chance to win.
It's, you know, we focus on all these things, but it really comes back down to fundamentals, right?
It really does. I mean, you know, we do a segment on the radio, Keys to the Game, and pretty much every game I can say, don't turn the ball over and get on the glass. I mean, that's every coach in America is going to say the same thing. And so it comes down to making shots. And that's why the NCAA tournament is so fun to watch. And just even last night, you know, you watch, you know, what was it, South Alabama and St. Francis, two schools I've never heard of, but it was an entertaining game. It was, mm-hmm. It's March is so much fun.
Greg, we appreciate your time. Best to you and Brian on your call tomorrow night.
Well, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thank you, Greg Gurley from the Kansas Basketball Radio Network. When we come back, Anthony Christensen will join us from Providence, but first a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. Come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. We go back to Providence now to talk to Anthony Christensen. He's there covering the Razorbacks. I misspoke earlier. John Calipari has not spoken to reporters yet, so that's going to happen later today, and you can read Anthony's coverage from that. Ethan Westerman there, too, at our website, wholehogsports.com. Anthony, you got to Providence yesterday. Kind of paint the picture from New England for us.
Oh, man, it's awesome. I mean, I haven't been able to wipe the smile off my face just because, I mean, this is my first men's basketball NCAA tournament that I'm covering, and it's just something I've always wanted to do. But it's really cool. I mean, Providence is it's a beautiful city. They've got all the March Madness stuff, like, all over the place. And, yeah, I mean, you can't walk anywhere without seeing something that's reminding you of what's going on, be it people wearing, you know, their school's gear or all the different, you know, signage and everything like that. So, I mean, it's awesome. Like, I know you can't see me right now, but I'm still smiling. Like, right over there in the other room, High Point is practicing right now. And as everybody knows, I am an owner of a first class ticket on board the Hus bus. So there's that. But no, it's great, man. This is awesome.
You know, what's interesting about this site where you're at this week is that outside of St. John's, nobody is like nobody's close to home. You got Purdue mm-hmm. from Indiana and Clemson's from South Carolina and High Point is from North Carolina. Help me out. Is it McNeese State is up there?
Yes.
Is that right?
McNeese State is in Louisiana.
You know, I mean, it's like Arkansas, Kansas, you know, Omaha. It's everybody is traveling there. I wonder, are you seeing a lot of fans, maybe outside of, and I don't even know if you'd see a lot of St. John's people until tomorrow. Like, are you seeing a lot of people around town that have made the trip up there for this?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's been a ton of Kansas people already up here. I know, you know, Kansas has always traveled well. We've already seen a good amount of Arkansas fans as well who have made the trip up, and even seen some Omaha fans, some McNeese fans. I think I've seen one Clemson fan so far. Mm-hmm. You know, so people are traveling. Seen a decent amount of Purdue people, so it's yeah, people are here already. Obviously, the games are tomorrow, so I'm sure there are going to be more people who show up today. But yeah, I think Kansas fans are probably the most numerous, at least that I've seen so far. But I'm expecting a lot of people to be showing up today and tomorrow and getting all that, so it'll be a lot of fun. But this is, yeah, that's kind of the picture right now.
The Clemson fans are busy watching spring football practice. I don't know if they'll be up there this week for the tournament. So kind of take us through Arkansas' schedule today. I know that they've got to practice at Brown University this morning, and then every team at these NCAA tournament sites, they come in, and I would assume this is going to be the case for Arkansas because it feels like they're going to go through their real practice this morning at Brown. And then this afternoon, they'll go through and kind of do almost like a TV op practice.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. I think John Calipari is meeting with media, I think, around 2. I think that's right around the same time they're going to be doing their shoot-around. I wouldn't even necessarily call this like an actual practice, just a shoot-around. But, yeah, like you mentioned, they're having a practice at Brown. Tried to get to go to that, but I was told I can't go because obviously it's – it's an actual practice, but you know, you never know if you don't, you're never going to hit the shot if you don't take it. So, so that's that. But yeah, so Arkansas will be here around 2 Eastern. So 1 Central. Time zones always mess with my head. So I'm going to have to make sure I don't forget that, but yeah, they're going to have that. And I'm sure, they're going to be keeping busy with scouting and everything. And obviously Kansas is a team they've quote-unquote scene. I know it was an exhibition, and Hunter Dickinson, Ryan Griffin, Shaquille Moore weren't available, and I'm not sure Shaquille Moore will be available for this game either, but yeah, that's kind of the basic look at their day.
Well, Jay, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com, most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. On our website right now, you can read Anthony's story, getting to know each of the teams at Arkansas basketball's NCAA tournament site. That's the headline, and it's on the front page of our website right now. Anthony, we talked to Greg Gurley earlier about Kansas. If Arkansas wins, they'll play either St. John's or Omaha, and the expectation is that it would most likely be St. John's. They're 30-4 this year, and Rick Pitino's really turned that program around in a hurry. Tell us about these two teams, St. John's and Omaha, and what potentially or maybe put it this way, what people are going to see when these two teams play tomorrow night.
Yeah, St. John's is, I mean, it's a Rick Pitino team, right? So, I mean, they're really good defensively. I mean, among the best defensive teams in the country. I mean, they guard so well. I mean, Zubi Ejiofor and RJ Lewis and all those guys, Kadari Richmond, everybody on the team is just so locked in defensively that, I mean, it makes it so difficult to score against them. And yeah, like just the way they guard through ball screens and everything. Like, I mean, they just, their defense is, it's like a form of art, basically, is what I'm trying to say. They're just so locked in defensively. And I mean, offensively, obviously RJ Lewis is awesome. Kadari Richmond had some struggles on the offensive end early. He's really kind of come on of late. Zubi Ejiofor puts a big time presence inside for them. So, I mean, that's kind of what you look at there. St. John's is really not good at shooting the three. So I think that's probably something that you're going to want to see. If you're Omaha, can you force St. John's to take more threes than they're comfortable taking? Or even Arkansas or Kansas, assuming St. John's does beat Omaha. But you get that. That's kind of the 30,000-foot view of St. John's. And then you look at Omaha. It's a team that's really hot right now. I mean, I think they won, I think it was 11 of their final 13 games. Kind of ran away with the Summit League tournament. Beat a really good St. Thomas team in that championship. They like to get out and run. I mean, it's a pretty moderate pace, but you can see they like to try and push the pace, kind of the anti St. John's almost, not entirely, but they like to get out and play at a pace. They're pretty good defensively, not the best defensive team on the planet, but they can guard, and I think you saw that just kind of through their Summit League tournament run. And then you look at just offensively, they like to move the ball around, they like to push it inside. Not the greatest shooting team in the world, but they're good. I mean, any team in this tournament is going to be good. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of the 30,000-foot view of both St. John's and Omaha.
You got two AP All-Americans that are in this field. You mentioned RJ Lewis at St. John's, He was second team AP All-America. This got released yesterday. Hunter Dickinson, third team All-American. You vote.
Yeah, I voted for one of those guys.
Well, I figure it was for Lewis.
Yes.
But I mean, I wanted to ask you about your AP ballot because you voted in this AP All-America team. Were you surprised by anybody who got on? Were you surprised by anybody maybe who got left off?
I was surprised Hunter Dickinson ended up making it just because I don't think he's been his best this year. And that's not to say he's not, you know, one of the best players in the country, because he absolutely is. I was just a little surprised to see that he got on there. And I was also a little surprised to see Chucky Hepburn from Louisville get left off. I think he's had a really good year. Obviously, Louisville is just it completely resurgent, just what a job Pat Kelsey's done there. And so I was a little surprised by those two. Those are really the only surprises I actually have, is those two getting on, or Hunter Dickinson getting on and Chucky Hepburn getting left off.
Kind of a, you know, it's a sign of how strong the SEC is this year. Three of the five first team All-Americans were from the SEC. Jani Broome at Auburn, Mark Sears at Alabama, Walter Clayton at Florida. I think I was maybe a little bit surprised that Clayton made the first team. Braden Smith at Purdue and Cooper Flagg, obviously, from Duke. That was the first team All-Americans.
Yeah, that was actually the exact ballot I submitted was for my first team, and that ended up being the first team All-America team. So that was kind of fun to see. But, yeah, I wasn't necessarily surprised by any of those guys getting on. I thought the longest shot of any of those five being on the first team All-America team was Walter Clayton, but I think he absolutely deserved it. I mean, you look at how Florida is playing and has played throughout the season. I think, you know, obviously he's kind of the guy there, though that's not to take anything away from guys like, you know, Will Richard or Elijah Martin or Alex Condon or anybody there. I think he's just kind of the focal point of that team, and you see just how good Florida is, and, you know, it's good to see, I guess, him get rewarded for that.
Florida, everybody, like, Florida's the trendy pick right now to win the national championship, and it makes me think they're going to lose in, like, the second round or something.
I could see, I've got Florida in the Final Four, but I have them, I don't remember if I've got them going to the championship or not. I know I've got them in the Final Four, but I do have Duke winning, just because, I mean, assuming Cooper Flagg does come back, which it does seem like, come back fully healthy, I should say, because he is going to come back. Florida, I just think that team is just too talented to overlook.
Am I right about this? Wouldn't Florida potentially have to play UConn in the second round?
I think they would.
Yeah,
I think you're right about that. Yes.
Yeah. So I mean, so and I said second round, just kind of pulled that out of thin air. I mean, playing UConn, I actually, you know, could potentially see that happening in the second round. That'd be a very very interesting match.
There's a lot of potential awesome second round games. I mean, you got potentially Houston against Gonzaga in the second round. You got Auburn versus one of Louisville or Creighton, excuse me. I mean, those would be fun games. I mean, every tournament game's going to be fun. What am I saying? It's the tournament. What are we doing?
How much do you think the national people are rooting for a Patino-Calipari round two game?
That's a great question. I'm sure it'd be good for ratings and everything. Obviously those guys are two Hall of Fame coaches, and obviously Bill Self is as well. But I mean, you have the history between those two guys, just dating back to Conference USA when John Calipari was at Memphis and Rick Pitino was at Louisville, and just kind of everything, and Calipari taking over Kentucky after Pitino had been there, and there's so much there. And obviously those guys have had their past together, so that was it lends itself to a very fun potential thing, but you don't want to overlook the possibility of a Bill Self versus Rick Pitino second round either, which, you know, that would also be very fun. But like I said, everything in the tournament is fun. It's the tournament. Don't expand it.
Anthony, tell everybody what you got coming this afternoon, you and Ethan.
Ethan and I, we're going to combine on a notebook. You know, I'm planning on having a game advance, just looking at obviously both Arkansas and Kansas, but I'm going to try to get an interesting story out of it, just with Bill Self and John Calipari, their history together, just because they're friends. They've competed against each other at the highest levels in this sport, quite literally. So I'm going to try to do that. And then also I'm hoping, and it looks like I'm going to do it, to do a little profile on Omaha coach Chris Crutchfield, who is obviously an assistant for a year at Arkansas. So that would be a lot of fun. I'm planning on going to the Omaha team hotel later and talking to him, and going to be here for their practice as well. So there's some hopefully good stuff coming. Hopefully I do a good enough job writing it, and hopefully people enjoy reading it. So
there's always, for a reporter who goes to one of these events, there's always this this feeling that you need to go justify all the money that they're spending on you. I remember in 2018 when we were in Omaha for 15 nights for the College World Series, I had 50 bylines from Omaha over the course of like 16 days. So it's nonstop and it's frantic, but it's a lot of fun. Anthony,
absolutely
appreciate it. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on as always.
All right. I want to tell you, you can find our podcast on Apple. Search Whole Hog Sports, put a video version on our YouTube page, and that's also Whole Hog Sports, and we put the video on our social media pages at Facebook and Twitter as well each weekday. When we come back, Christina Long will join me here in studio. We'll talk about Razorback baseball, their win over ORU, and today's game over at Windy Baumwalker Stadium. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you that Scott Tabor, the former Razorback pitcher, is coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. That's going to be next Wednesday at noon at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com, to hear Scott Tabor next Wednesday, March 26th, at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. Christina Long is here with me now. Arkansas baseball beat ORU 4-1 last night at Baumwalker Stadium. Teams are going to play again this afternoon at 3 o'clock. And the wind was a factor last night. And you thought it was a factor last night, wait till today. It's going to shift. Last night you had a south wind, which was knocking down, you know, a lot of stuff. It's blowing everything left. And today it's going to be a west wind, which is going to be at the back of the stadium. And they're talking about sustained winds today of 30, 35 miles an hour with gusts up to 55. It could be like a home run derby over there.
Yeah. Yeah, which is not at all what we saw yesterday. You know, Dave Inhorn talked a little bit about how they hit several, you know, they had several hard hit balls that went pretty far that on any other day probably would have been out. And so you end up seeing, you know, a pretty low scoring game, and every, you know, there's concern about the offense again after the one game. And but I think it's going to be a little bit different
today. I'm not concerned about
that. I know that. No. I mean, like, a lot of people. Well, as soon as the offense starts to falter.
Go sit out there in the wind last night, yes, and I think you would change your opinion.
It was very difficult.
I was telling you, I was upstairs at Baum last night. I was walking down the hallway, and I guess there was a door open somewhere upstairs. I mean, it was literally, I was walking into a headwind going down the hallway back to the press box. It was, I won't say I've never experienced that, but it was one of the windier games I've seen, and now today it's supposed to be like, not just windier, but significantly more than it was yesterday. This is, I'm interested to see how this is going to go today.
Yeah, it's going to be something. It's funny. I was sitting there and me and Oliver, the baseball SID, were both starting to get some like allergy issues up there with all the windows open, the press box, and it is so much worse today. I'm like very, you probably can hear it, I'm very stuffy today. And I don't usually even get allergies, but I was driving over here and there's just dust and dirt in the air everywhere. And yeah, so it is definitely windy, and I think it is definitely going to have an impact on this game.
I told you it felt like Lubbock, Texas. Then I looked outside and I saw trees and I changed my tune. But yeah, I mean, it's a very windy day here. Been that way for about a week and a half.
It's gotten really annoying. I'm tired of it.
You'll get over it.
I don't know.
Chance of snow tonight. You know, this is one of those days where, you know, you stick around. No, I'm not. I mean, I don't think it's going to be like anything significant,
well,
but
yeah,
I mean, there's a chance.
That's so crazy. It's
supposed to be about down into the, you know, low 30s tonight.
That's so annoying.
It's just how it is.
I just want us to turn the page and be done with cold.
Everybody got pinched the other day on St. Patrick's Day. You got to pinch yourself and see. It's March 19th. It's still winter for another day or two, depending on how you look at this. I was always like, what day do you think is the start of the next? Like, to me, it was always every third month, the 21st of the month was the start. But then, you know, people are, oh, no, it's technically the 20th well,
whatever
at
day it's
7:14
actually
the, p.m. or something.
I mean, like, there's the actual, like, space reasons that it's, like, that, you know, equinoxes and solstices happen. But
I'm going to stick with the 21st of March,
you're going
June,
by, you're going
September,
by vibe.
December.
I gotcha.
I'm not going by vibe. I'm just going by
like
what I was taught. We're never taught the other
let's
part.
Let's see. What day is... Oh, it's not actually in my calendar here. What day the actual spring equinox is. It's not on my calendar, so I don't actually know what day it is this year.
March 21st. That's the first day of spring.
I'm going to look it up if you're right.
It's still winter for two more days. We just got to have to... We have to remind ourselves.
March 20th.
At what time?
Really? 2:01 a.m.
Yeah.
Are you going to stay up for
it? So that's like overnight, right?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I'm not staying.
So it's basically... so I guess it's probably the night of the 19th, the early morning.
So it's tonight. It's like... It's overnight.
Today the 19th? Oh my God. I didn't even know what day it is. I don't even know what day it is.
I will not be celebrating the start of spring until the 21st.
Okay.
Okay. So, just so you know.
All the candy will be on sale.
It might be. So this game last night, the thing that stands out to me is that Ben Bibee got off to a great start. And four innings for him, scoreless. That's piggybacked on the two scoreless in relief that he had against Ole Miss last week. And all of a sudden, it's like, wow, here is this veteran pitcher who seems like he's turned a corner and maybe found something. Not that Arkansas really, you know, I mean, you say what you want to about their starters last week, but you just kind of look at the overall talent of the pitching, and it's not like they necessarily needed this, but I'm sure they'll take it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny, too, because, you know, ask Dave Van Horn after the game, hey, what's been different with Bibee? What, you know, maybe they changed something. Maybe they found something in what he was doing and tweaked it. Or maybe, you know, somebody talked to him about, you know, maybe there was some driver of it. And he basically said, well, we're not really sure.
We wish we knew.
Yeah, wish we knew, but we'll take it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's been good to see him get going. You know, I'm very interested to see how Colin Fisher does today because he had, you know, a rough appearance against Ole Miss. And this is obviously a very different situation. But I think I'll be curious to see what Fisher does now back in midweek.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine he's going to pitch a whole lot because they want to have him ready for the weekend. But
for sure.
Yeah, maybe if he's able to be efficient, go out there and give him three innings, kind of like what he's done the last couple of weeks. They've got some other pitchers who I'm sure need some work. I was actually a little surprised to see Parker Coyle come out and pitch yesterday.
I kind of was too.
But then you think about it, he's been pitching twice on the weekend quite a bit, and he only pitched once against
That's
Ole Miss.
True.
So, you know, you think about it in that way. And how about the situation last night where he's getting ready to – there's two outs in the seventh, and his cousin, his first cousin, Owen Coyle, is a DH at ORU. In the on-deck circle, they've got all this family here. You know, both sets of grandparents have come, mom and dad, everybody's there. And then ORU's coach says, hey, Owen, come back, and puts in a pinch hitter. I mean, I understand that he's playing the odds there. Owen Coyle's a left-handed hitter. Parker's a left-handed pitcher. I think they may have had a runner on base at that point. I can't remember for sure. They bring in a right-handed hitter to face him. But it's one of those deals where, like, some things are bigger than baseball.
Man.
These are two guys that, unless they, you know, ORU comes back over here for a regional, which is certainly possible because we've seen them here quite a few times over the years, how many other opportunities, maybe never because Parker Coyle's not pitching today, are you going to have where you got these two family members get to face against each other in a Division One game? Because Parker Coyle is going to be gone at the end of this year. He's draft eligible, and some team's going to want that left-handed arm.
Yeah, and Parker said he was kind of disappointed. You know, he like saw him come out there and was excited about it and was a little bit disappointed. But especially because, you know, this was something that we wrote about and talked about yesterday was, you know, Owen Coyle's house burned down.
Along with Will Edmondson.
Yes, Will Edmondson, the former Arkansas outfielder. They lost their family homes. And, you know, obviously, I don't actually fault the coach for doing what he did or anything or think, oh, their house burned down. You should have let him hit again, whatever. But that's just like another thing that, like, it would have been cool for the family to see that.
Yes. It gives you, I mean, obviously they're going through a tough time. But and even if they were going through good times, it's a neat family moment that, you know, everybody's got their cell phones out. And I'd like to see the video. And, like, hear the groans. Because, you know, everybody had their cell phone out.
Yeah.
And they're getting ready to, you know, film. And, like, hear the groans of the family when they see that they're taking him out.
Yeah.
Even
so
on the TV broadcast, Brett Dolan and Troy Eklund, they were you know, they were getting on the ORU coach pretty good about
so funny
taking him out.
Yeah, Oliver, you know, I mentioned baseball SID. He was saying he had sent the broadcast team, you know, some photos that the family had sent of them, you know, when they were younger playing against each other or whatever. And he was like, I sent them all these photos and they might not even use them.
I think they were able to use one. They had it up on the screen.
He's not even at bat.
They had it up on the screen as they were making the change and bringing a pinch hitter in. That was unfortunate. Charles Davelin continues to play well for Arkansas. I knew he'd been playing well, but I really kind of dug into the numbers last night. I mean, the numbers are really good. It's four consecutive multi-hit games. He's had multiple hits in seven of the last nine. And over that nine-game stretch, he's 19 for 37 at the plate. Bubba and I talked about this the other day, and Davelin had one last night. Not a shift beater, but he went the other way, and it found the hole between third and short. He and Kozel are probably as good as I've seen from the left side of the plate going the opposite way in the last several years.
Yeah, it's interesting how he's kind of flown under the radar with, you know, we've talked about Cujillo and how much, you know, attention he gets, rightfully so, with some of the numbers that he had, especially early in the season. And then we talked a little bit about Iredale and how, you know, he's lived up to expectation and been exciting and somebody that gets talked about a lot, you know, even Vahiva getting talked about a lot, even though he can be kind of hit and miss. And I feel like, yeah, Davelin it's Davelin. I've got to get it right.
Davelin.
I don't think it's Da. I think it's Da. I want to get it right.
I know Lon is at the end.
Yes,
because
I
have
Lon.
I've been told that.
It just
that
feels
part.
So much more natural to say Davelin.
Just call him Chuck.
Chuck, yeah.
That's what he told me in the preseason. Because, you know, they call him Chuck.
Yeah.
The players do. I said, do you want to be called Charles? You want to be called Chuck? And he kind of gave kind of a non-answer. Yeah. But I think in all of that, he said Chuck is fine.
Yeah. All right, Chuck. So, yeah, I mean, I feel Chucky D.
How about that?
Chucky D is kind of flying under the radar a little bit with some of the other guys, especially in the top of that order and how, you know, relatively strong that top of the order has been, especially, you know, when you look at the bottom, that's kind of where some of the concerns come. But like we talked about yesterday, that's pretty normal. But I think, yeah, seeing what old Chucky D has brought to the lineup has been it's been exciting to watch.
Chucky D.
You got to tell him that. You should just, next time you ask him a question, just very naturally say, so Chucky D, what did you see?
I made it around. It was weird last night because in the interview room, Dave spoke and Chucky D was sitting in the back and they were, Oliver left to go find the pitchers and it took a little while. And it was just this weird thing where he's just kind of sitting back there quiet and you don't know. It's like, you know, should we bother him? Should we talk to him? Should we make small talk here? Very awkward situation.
Well, we did the photo shoot with them for the Hogs Illustrated baseball preview. He was very nice. He was very friendly.
Yeah. Also asked Ben Bybee last night about, you know, is it going to be house divided?
Right.
When Arkansas plays KU, because his parents, and I was texting his dad last night, his parents both are KU grads. And for several years, they had season tickets to Jayhawk basketball games, which are very difficult to get, by the way.
Yeah.
Whenever I was doing the story about the Bud Walton seating or reseating plan a couple of months back, I was talking to Ryan White, who's the executive director at the Razorback Foundation, and he came here from Kansas. And so Kansas was kind of this comparison that he was using to everything. And he's given me numbers about, you know, how hard it is for people to get tickets. And you think it's tough to get tickets in Fayetteville, trying to go in and getting some at Fog Allen. Yeah. But Ben grew up going to KU basketball games. His dad actually told me that he took him to a father-son Bill Self camp.
Oh, no way.
When he was younger. And that's actually, and this was last year whenever I was talking to his dad about this. And it's what kind of inspired me to take my son to the Calipari father-son camp last June. And so, big KU fans, and I asked Ben, I said, is it kind of a weird week whenever you've got these two teams playing in the NCAA tournament? And he said, yeah, definitely. But then he also said, you know, we've had experience with this a lot. Played in a bowl game his freshman year. They played in the NCAA tournament his freshman year. Of course, they had the exhibition game back in October. And he said that whenever he went home for that bowl game as a freshman, he said his parents were wearing Arkansas shirts.
There you go.
He said, so I think that's what's going to happen this time around. But yeah, it's weird because you don't ever really think about the players who come here from other parts of the country or other parts of the world, and they've got their childhood teams too. And when you see them kind of, you know, cross or intersect.
Yeah.
It's a weird dynamic.
Yeah, it's definitely something you don't always think about. And especially because, you know, with baseball, you know, they can have some really good guys from in-state. And so, you know, we love the stories about guys that grew up Razorback fans or whatever. But a lot of people, yeah, come from different places. And that was something that was interesting talking to the Aloy's dad about how he was saying he played baseball at Hawaii and he grew up watching Hawaii baseball games because that was what was available to him to watch, whether it was on TV or in person or whatever. And he said, you know, his kids growing up, you know, when they did, they watched SEC baseball. They weren't that interested in Hawaii. You know, they watched it, they liked it, but they weren't that interested in going to Hawaii. They grew up wanting to go to the SEC because they grew up watching SEC baseball on TV.
Kevin is a doctor in Overland Park, and he sent me a handful of pictures of Ben from whenever he was a kid growing up going to the KU games. And the last one he sent me, he said, "This is us with my good friend, Dr. Mark Allen. He's Fog Allen's grandson."
That's so crazy. Yeah. I think Anthony might have talked to him.
Really?
Yeah, because okay. Yeah, because Anthony did a story. It was not for us. It was a freelance thing, and he did a story, something about, I think, Fog Allen's family. And my dad knew of a doctor who was related to Fog Allen and connected them. So yeah, I think he talked to him. That's so funny. What a small world.
Yeah, that is crazy. Justin Thomas played toward the end last night, so he's okay. Asked Dave Van Horn about him. He said a normal human being would probably be beat up, but he's pretty stout, and I guess he can take on the wall because that was one of the harder shots I've ever seen. Talking about when Thomas ran into the outfield wall down at Ole Miss over the weekend. So good to see him back out there last night. And then I wrote a note on this. And this is one of those deals where it's a unique – where Fayetteville's located. It's unique. ORU is actually the closest Division I program to Fayetteville. I use their ballparks as reference points. So how far is, in ORU's case, Johnson Stadium in Tulsa from Baum Walker Stadium? And it's the closest Division I program by a good bit to the Razorbacks, just 118 miles away. What would you think number two is?
Ooh, I'd have to think about it.
You read the story. You should know.
I should know. I don't remember.
It's Missouri State.
Oh,
yeah, Missouri
okay.
State at 152 miles. Third, UCA at 157. Fourth, this one probably surprises some people, Oklahoma State.
I was going to guess that for a second because I was like, how far is that from ORU? Not that far.
You're talking about, now Oklahoma State to ORU is closer than Oklahoma State
right,
to Fayetteville.
Right, but I mean,
obviously.
I would think that they wouldn't be that, it's like, you know, if ORU is
they're
the closest,
they're about 80 miles apart.
Think, okay.
Anyway, Oklahoma State, the fourth farthest program from Arkansas, 184 miles between Obrate and Baum. Euler, or Little Rock, Arkansas, Little Rock, 188 miles. UAPB, 229 miles. OU, 240 miles.
Huh.
So there's that.
That's crazy.
You can tell your friends now. Hey, here's some trivia.
Yeah.
How many out-of-state baseball programs are closer to the Razorbacks than the closest in-state program? The answer is two.
Huh.
ORU and Missouri State. So
I guess it makes sense that they've come over here so much in the last couple
of
years.
They used
although
to play,
some of it's regionals. But
well, they used to play all the time. I mean, I think there were years where they would play kind of what they're doing with Missouri State this year.
Yeah.
Where they would play here on a midweek, and then they would go there 2 or 3 weeks later and play for a midweek. So Dr. Ryan Fulmar beforehand, he said that, you know, ORU wants to play Arkansas quite a bit, and he thinks Arkansas wants to play ORU quite a bit. Real quick, spring football, who could forget? What did you learn yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, we got to talk to a couple of the new transfers for the first time yesterday. We talked to Corey Robinson, the offensive lineman, and Caleb Wooden, the defensive back. That's one of the things I actually do like about spring practice, you know, even though we've talked about how it's kind of a mixed bag as far as how much you can really learn. I actually like getting to, you know, interview some of these new guys and kind of get to know them a little bit. I do think it's valuable. So we talked to them. It was interesting to hear from Robinson. You know, he's a left tackle. He's got a ton of experience at left tackle. And he chose a school that had a left tackle back, a starting left tackle that was one of their better offensive linemen. And he said that, you know, when Arkansas first reached out to him in the transfer portal, Fernando Carmona reached out to him, basically, you know, called him or texted him and said, you know, here's the plan. I'm going to move inside because it's going to be, you know, better for my, you know, professional aspirations. And so if you want to come here, like, left tackle is kind of your spot. You know, you don't have to worry about a competition from a returning starter. So it's kind of interesting to hear a little bit about that. As far as practice goes, they're going to scrimmage tomorrow. So I think we'll get to learn a little bit more from that. They'll scrimmage in the stadium before they go off for spring break. And they had a lot. It was an interesting day. There was a lot of tipped balls, a lot of, you know, defensive playmaking. I watched a lot of, you know, kind of the 7-on-7 periods or the 1-on-1s with receivers and DBs. And yeah, Larry Worth made a couple of really good plays. Keyshawn Davila, the junior college transfer, had a couple of really nice plays. As far as the receivers go, I continue to be impressed with Raylan Sharp. We've heard about him from, you know, we got to talk to him, and you know, a couple of guys have sort of touted him as, you know, hey, don't overlook him just because he's a little bit small. You know, he's got a lot of skill there, and so he's been really consistent in practice for sure.
I wanted to reference this because we talked a couple of weeks ago about how Arkansas was not going to have its spring game televised,
right,
or streamed on the ESPN app. Pretty much the whole SEC is doing this now.
Really?
You talk about, is there a group of people who are more paranoid than college football coaches? The answer is no, unequivocally. And they all kind of, you know, it's follow the leader. One person does it, and then everybody else is going to follow, they're going to fall in line. Pretty much everybody has quit televising their spring games. I got a press release from ESPN the other day. These are the spring games that ESPN is going to show this year. Okay, like what spring games do you think they would show in a normal, like in 2024? What spring games would you expect to see?
And we're talking on like TV or streaming? Because I would think they would stream almost all of them.
On either.
Probably a lot of the Big 12.
You would think of the big programs, right?
Yeah.
Alabama, Georgia.
I guess if we're a limit, you know, if you said the SEC thinking about,
I guess,
other
linear
than
television. Yeah. On linear television, you would expect to see.
Yeah. A lot of the Big 12 programs, just because of how sort of entertainment oriented they are, Colorado especially. I would think some of the bigger Big 10 programs, I mean, Ohio State, Michigan, if we're throwing the SEC back in there, then sure, they, you know, Alabama, theirs is a big deal. Auburn's is a big deal.
From what I can tell, these are the only spring games they're showing, whether it be on TV or streaming. Okay, you ready for this power pack bunch of schools? Virginia, Georgia Tech, Utah, Houston, Texas A&M, Colorado, and West Virginia.
I got one right.
That's it.
And a bunch of Big 12 schools.
Yeah, that's it.
That's interesting.
Crazy.
Very interesting.
They say in the press release, they say, let's see here. The majority of SEC and ACC teams have opted to produce behind-the-scenes programming for their college networks instead of televising traditional spring football games.
So they get the editorial control over what,
right,
gets shown,
yes,
on their like personal streaming service.
And nobody's able to, yeah, get any formations out of,
yeah,
you know, okay, and nobody's able to see, yeah, C.J. Brown have a big spring game and go try to poach him,
yeah,
out of the transfer portal. None of that.
Yeah, I mean, Deion Sanders floated the idea of, you know, hey, we want to play another team. We want, and you know, Fran Brown from Syracuse said, yeah, we'll come play Colorado for a spring game, or basically. But I just,
all it's going to take is, yeah, one quarterback to break his, yeah, ankle, and that never happens again.
Break his ankle, or yeah, get recruited by another. You know, like that's the thing. And so yeah, I mean, I think you're right. There's a lot of paranoia, whether right or wrong. But yeah, I think spring games are not going to be around much longer.
12 SEC teams apparently have opted into, quote, original spring football programming on the SEC network. Those are Alabama, Arkansas, Auburn, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Missouri, Vanderbilt, Texas, Tennessee, South Carolina, Ole Miss, and Oklahoma.
I wonder who kind of set that trend. Like, who first said they
didn't Vanderbilt
it?
First do this a few
That's
years ago?
That's so weird.
I know. of all the teams to do this, I think Vanderbilt, they didn't want to, and it may have been, it may, because, you know, they're renovating their stadium,
right,
or they were renovating,
uh-huh,
it. I think it might have been due to that,
yeah,
that they had some sort of spring special, and now, you know, the combination of, are the spring games going to stick around? It's just
weird.
A combination of everything. Now everybody said, we're going to take
just
the Vanderbilt
that
route.
Yeah, and just make it kind of a little TV special instead of, you know, not a live programming event. Very interesting. I wonder if Clemson, because Clemson kind of makes a whole spectacle out. Like I've talked,
Clemson
about
is
how,
not televising. They're right here. They're going to have, quote, original spring football programming on ACC Network.
Okay, yeah, because that used to be, you know, Dabo would basically MC it on ACC Network. It was very interesting.
No more. And what's happened is that because and some of these were televised in the past, but it seems to me like a lot more pro days are getting televised,
yeah,
now because
which
the
is
spring
so weird
football.
Because, yeah, we talked about this, you know, the other day. It's like, are people really watching pro day like that?
Alabama's got its pro day televised today on SEC Network, the so-called last day of winter. You've got Miami, Texas, LSU, Ole Miss. They're all going to have their pro days televised, too, over the next week and a half or so.
Yeah, it's an interesting shift we're seeing, and I'll be curious, yeah, where it goes from here, and if we see some other programs outside the SEC, some of those Big 12 programs, especially, you know, that are still televising, if they kind of move away from that.
I wonder if like, just the whole structure of spring football, you know, as the NFL model tries to be replicated in a lot of ways in the college game, if we might see something more like where you've got organized team activities. Yeah. OTAs for a weekend here, a weekend there, and you get rid of that, you know, 42-day window or whatever it is in the spring, and you kind of go more toward, hey, we're going to meet up maybe once, one weekend every month leading up to the season and do stuff.
Yeah, I think that's very likely. I think as we kind of try to figure out the best solution to this, I think that would definitely be a solution, especially as, you know, everything else is going more toward an NFL model, so... Why not that, too? But I think that could be a solution that some coaches like the idea of.
Well, I just want to say this. It's not just Arkansas that has opted not to have its spring game televised. Because I did make a comment a couple of weeks ago. I said it seems very odd that they've decided to do this when everybody else, you know, has their spring game televised. Pretty much everybody is moving away from this, which is pretty interesting to me. We appreciate you being with us. Appreciate Greg Gurley and Anthony Christensen for their time talking to us today from Providence. We'll be back tomorrow. Bubba Carpenter is going to be in studio here. We'll talk Razorback baseball. We'll also have a segment on Razorback basketball before tomorrow night's NCAA tournament game between the Razorbacks and the Jayhawks. Hope that we see you at our website, wholehogsports.com, or on our podcast tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.